Totally Football Show. Today, Nations League. If Harry Maguire can't get his head around it, what chance do you have? Well, we make it easy with our Nation Explanation. As England play Spain, France face Germany, and most intriguingly of all, Wales have Ireland and Denmark. How will they fare against this nation forced to field an amateur side by internal conflict? And how will the Denmark game go? All that, plus Robert Earnshaw's Space Jammy, La Liga's Ronaldo Whammy, and David Beckham's Inter Miami in the Totally Football Show. Woo! Hey everybody, pal! It's UEFA's brand new theme tune. Giorgio Twinford and Frank van der Heijden responsible for that gem. Hello, James Horncastle.
Hello.
Hello, Julien Laurent.
Hello.
And hello, Alvaro Romeo.
Hello.
Hello there. Commentator for TalkSport International, of course. And a very accent-tastic show we have for you today, listener. That's, first of all, it's one of the most exciting international weekends that I can remember this, and that's such a great piece of music, isn't it, Julien?
Love it. I like the logo. I like everything about it. It's new. It's a bit different. I don't find it too confusing, but okay. I think it's cool.
Excellent. What about you, Alvaro? You must be pumped about the game against England.
Well, I think that Spain needs to play against a team like England for once, just to see what the real level is, because against Russia, I think that when we were knocked out from the World Cup, we didn't see that.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, you got knocked out on penalties by Russia.
Absolutely, yes. Absolutely. But I think that it was also a matter of motivation. Playing against Russia wasn't what the Spanish players needed. Mm-hmm. All that said, and I think that the anthem sounds very monumental, mm-hmm. as if an army was going to attack you, a full army. So I really like it that way, yeah.
Yeah. But for example, if you were to do this.
You shall not pass!
Yeah, that would work. Mm. Excellent. Well, we've got so much to discuss, haven't we? Mm-hmm. First of all, mention Harry Maguire, who said about the Nations League. The boss tried to explain it to us the best he could the other day. It took a lot of studying. It is confusing. We're just trying to get our heads around it. For us players...
Slab heads.
For us players, we just go into each game trying to win it and see where it takes us. Hmm. All right. I mean, listener, you know how it works. But, James, how does it work?
Well, James, the 55 Euro nations are arranged into four tiers, leagues A to D, based on their FIFA ranking. Mm. Each tier split into four groups, and guess what? England, who are in the top tier, believe it or not, they've got Spain and Croatia.
France, the world champions, have Germany and the Netherlands, for example, in our group, and those teams play each other home and away over 10 weeks between, you know, September, October and November. And after that, the top team in each group earns promotion and the bottom team drops.
Wow.
And the four group winners in the top tier go into a knockout final in June to decide the first ever Nations League winner.
So does this replace the European Championships, James?
Well, as for the next Euros, Jim Paul, UEFA say they've actually streamlined qualification. So it starts in March 2019 with 10 groups, and the top two in each group will qualify automatically for Euro 2020.
That, of course, leaves four places at Euro 2020, which will be filled by the top-ranked teams in the Nations League groups that haven't already qualified. UEFA, you're welcome. You know, what it actually means, more than anything, is that we're going to get to see some really, really, really top games. Instead of, say, England against Slovakia or whatever, we've got England against Spain, we've got the double world champion whammy of France taking on Germany, and also for the smaller nations, like, I don't know, Malta, they're going to be playing the Faroe Islands, so, you know, something a little bit more...
The idea was always to face teams of the same level, instead of having those friendlies at times that are completely... you know, unbalanced, and, you know, some big nations end up winning 4-0 or even not really keen on playing those kind of games. At least you play a team of your level, and if you do well against them, then you can get into a tougher group and then see how well you can do. And even if that means then, you know, the next one you get relegated again, but, you know, at least it's a bit more even, I think, and it's quite interesting.
It's thumbs up so far while we wait for the first game to be played, which is going to be 4 o'clock this Thursday afternoon. We'll talk about some of the fixtures that have got us most moist after this.
You're listening to the Totally Football Show with James Richardson.
England-Spain coming up on Saturday. The nation, James, had a summer fling with the national team, which ended a little bit too soon against Croatia, who they've drawn once again in the group. That's coming up, the clash with Croatia in October for England. But what are your thoughts about Saturday night at Wembley against Spain?
I think, yeah, Southgate's obviously gone with a lot of continuity, kind of stuck with the same group, the same squad, more or less, that we had at the World Cup. So, yeah, I expect to see the love train back in action. How will Sergio Ramos deal with that? I don't know.
It's a good question.
With his elbows, I guess.
Right. What's been the kind of... Has there been much talk in the Spanish press, Álvaro, in the run-up to this game?
I think so, yes, but not for the sake of the UEFA Nations League itself, but for the sake that we've got a new manager, mm-hmm. and he wants to break with the past. And I think that it's not good to try to break with the past and start over again playing against England at Wembley. I mean, the difference between the format to qualify for the Euro that we had before and the format that we've got now with the UEFA Nations League is the fact that there is a huge increase in the amount of competitive games played. Mm. To qualify for Euro 2016, you have to play a maximum of 12. To qualify for Euro 2020, you have to play a maximum of 16. So there are four more competitive games, and Luis Enrique will have to deal with all this straight away from the beginning. There are some absentees that are quite relevant, I would say, the likes of Jordi Alba, for example, the likes of Koke. Luis Enrique had a spat with Jordi Alba back at his time in Barcelona. Uh-huh. And it's still to be seen whether Luis Enrique is capable of giving electric shock to this Spanish team that seemed to be sleepy during the World Cup.
Right.
He is the right person for that. He's a Champions League winner. And I believe that Spain will have much more intensity than they had in the past.
Okay, I have a couple of questions. One is, what happened with Diego Costa that he left the squad?
Personal reasons. It's a bit strange because on Monday, after saying that he wasn't going with the Spanish national team, he was still training at Atlético de Madrid, uh-huh. and then he picked a niggling injury. So let's see how it goes with Diego Costa. What is for sure is that there is a replacement, Iago Aspas,
yes.
the Celta striker. And I think that he will deputize really well for Diego Costa, meaning this as well, that Álvaro Morata may have a chance. I mean, he recognized last week that his mind was gone from football last season. He couldn't find himself on the pitch. And perhaps Álvaro Morata here at Wembley can find the motivation to perform again.
Yeah. A chance for Álvaro Morata.
I like the team-building exercise that Luis Enrique had been doing, which is to get all the players in, an escape room?
Yesterday.
Where you have to work out how to get out.
Really?
Yeah.
And how did that play out?
I think they've got out.
They did?
Yeah.
It's all about IQ in there, like you mentioned before with Harry Maguire.
Ah, yeah.
one more interesting thing about Luis Enrique, he's applying the methods that he applied back at Celta. So basically he puts an scaffolding in the training ground and he oversees the training from the heights.
Okay.
Which is something that he didn't do at Barcelona, but he's doing again.
All right. Excellent. Excellent. Of course, building a scaffolding for the national team manager is something that I think they were thinking of for Julian Lopetegui after he signed for Real Madrid. But hey, that's a little bit dark.
It's also a Spanish team without Piqué, without David Silva, and without Andres Iniesta as well. And you know, it's only three players, but they're so big that it feels a bit like the end of an era as well. And you wonder how they're going to cope with, you know, without, I mean, especially Piqué, because
you're talking
behind
England, aren't you?
No. I mean, you know, you beat Panama, so you should be confident. I'm kidding. Before I get abused. No, but, I mean, Alvaro would know more than me, but David Silva and Iniesta, two huge losses, obviously, but there's so much talent in those positions, behind them anyway, to come younger and etc. For Piqué, however, in terms of centre-backs, mm-hmm. you know, behind Sergio Ramos and Piqué, it's, you know, there's not much coming through.
Deluge.
Yeah, it's a bit like, oh, okay, what's
going
next?
Going to be either Nacho, Real Madrid defender, he can feature as a centre-back, or César Azpilicueta, who has been playing as a centre-back for Chelsea, but in a three defender line.
Right.
So this is going to be slightly tricky because Luis Enrique plays with a 4-4-2. There are some absentees that retire from international football, Silva, Piqué and Iniesta, and I don't think that no one in the squad is as good as they were.
Right.
So Spain is definitely not as good as 2 months ago.
Oh, okay. Meanwhile, picking up his second cap is Marcos Alonso, who's in exceptional form and has been for a while. How has he only got? How is this only his second cap?
Because Julen Lopetegui preferred to cap some other players, and Marcos Alonso perhaps never had any success in the Spanish league, meaning that you needed to have a satellite television to see how good he was for Chelsea under Antonio Conte. But Marcos Alonso is going to be the key man now in the Spanish left-hand side, I think, because Jordi Alba is no longer there, and given his turbulent relationship with Luis Enrique, perhaps Jordi Alba will no longer play for Spain. Ooh. So I think that it's a good time for Marcos Alonso, for Saúl Ñíguez, for Sergi Roberto, maybe Kepa, the goalkeeper, to become important in the Spanish national team.
Kepa, whose second name is, Álvaro?
Arrizabalaga. Not easy, I know.
He's from where you're from, yeah?
Yes, the Basque Country, yeah.
Okay, all right. Okay, well, it was 2-2 last time these two teams faced each other. That was at Wembley, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Okay. So we'll have to see how that plays out on Saturday. Also, there's France and Germany. We'll hear Jules' thoughts on that extraordinary Wales-Denmark game. And also, what, Italy have qualified for this one, James?
Yeah, pending relegation to Group B.
Right. you laugh, but we'll hear more about all of that after this.
He lines up to hit it, and yes! It's deflected for a corner! That's over 12 corners! Yes! No time to take it, though. It's finished 0-0. What a result!
Sorry, our fault. You see, with same-game multibets from Paddy Power, you can combine multiple selections from one match into one bet, and you'll get money back as a free bet if one leg of your fourfold same-game multibet lets you down. Paddy Power, enough of the nonsense. Applies to pre-match fourfold same-game multibets on UK and top European leagues. Max free bet £10 per customer per day. Minimum odds. Exclude shop bets. T's and C's apply. 18+. BeGambleAware.org.
Monday 24th of September, listener, the FIFA Best Awards are taking place at the Festival Hall in London. Cristiano Ronaldo will be there. Luka Modric will be there. Mo Salah.
Will Cristiano Ronaldo be there?
I'm just thinking, will he be there? We'll see. But I tell you what, I will be on stage. Ah. And so will you, James Horncastle, Michael Cox and Duncan Alexander, in a different room, admittedly, in the South Bank Centre for Totally Football Live. But I know which one I'd rather be at.
Yeah. What's but the I'd real be best? The
exactly. So, hey, listen, if you want to come and join us at our thing with the cool kids, then southbankcentre.co.uk for all your ticketing needs. If, by chance, you're based in the Manchester area and you're busy on the 24th of September, but the 5th of October sounds more to your liking, then, hey, we'll be at the Royal Northern College of Music. We'll pull up there on the 5th of October in our transit van and pile out me, Rory Smith, Daniel Story and James Horncastle again. Tickets for that, the few that are left, you can find at ctickets.com. That's seetickets.com. Although you might know this because if you went to the Football Weekly event in Manchester this week, they were handing out flyers for our show there, which must have gone down really well. Right, so much to look forward to this weekend. Northern Ireland are on Friday. They're in the second tier. They're taking on Bosnia-Herzegovina in their promotion push. Italy, I've got Poland on Friday and then Portugal away, haven't they?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we talked more about that in Golazzo, which is all about Quagliarella and his extraordinary goals and his even more incredible backstory.
Yeah, check it out.
Check that out. Scotland have Albania on Monday.
And Israel, no?
They're in the third tier, Scotland.
Christian Panucci is Albanian.
Oh, yeah. Of course, he's with a lovely beard these days.
After De Blasi as well. They love an Italian manager. Mm.
Who doesn't, Jules? Who doesn't?
True.
Wales, meanwhile, have Ireland. And then they are visiting a Denmark team hastily cobbled together from, well, futsal players and YouTubers. Here's their manager. I've had a chat with every single player on the plane on our way here. I do not know any of them in advance. Therefore, I've had to take it all the way from the bottom and ask what their names are and what position they play. Yeah, Ryan Giggs there. I think it was a similar I'm joking, of course. I think it was a similar experience for Jon Jensen when he met up with the Denmark squad. They've already played a game together.
Yeah, and it went really well. They lost just 3-0.
Yeah, against Slovakia with Marit Hamzic and Skrtel. So proper team. This is all because, as you probably read, listener, of a dispute over the national side's commercial rights. If they don't fulfil the fixture, they could get kicked out of the Nation League. Right. It's become a really interesting game because of this. I think UEFA should be thanking them.
Well, I believe that this is something that may happen in the future in some other nations as well. We have seen Mohamed Salah, for example, having a problem with the Egyptian Federation as well.
Right.
But this is very exciting as well, because it gives you the chance to compare what so-called footballers are and how good they are in comparison to top professional footballers. I'm checking here the statistics of Denmark versus Slovakia. And Slovakia had it so easy that they had the 73% of the possession. They kick all the corners, all the shots on target in there. And the Denmark team, I haven't been able to watch the whole game, but apparently weren't just good enough. And I think that it can be also a way of valuing how good professional football is. But moving forward, this is going to be affecting the Danish team a lot if it doesn't get solved as soon as possible. And some of the key figures, like Kasper Schmeichel and Christian Eriksen, are very adamant in their position. So it seems that the negotiations are totally broken.
Right. They're adamant that the Danish Federation must stand and deliver on the commercial rights. Ask your parents. Okay. Were Spain to have a similar issue, Alvaro, Michael Cox has told us that you're quite a five-a-side player.
I try to be.
Also, didn't your cousin appear in a Copa del Rey game?
Yesterday.
Yes. Just yesterday?
Yes.
Okay, who was that and how did it go?
He didn't play because the cup is given to the players, to the non-regulars in Logroñés, his team. But he's a good striker, actually. He played for Spain under-17, under-16, with David De Gea, Boyan, Fran Mérida, former Arsenal player. But he never made it to the top flight. But yeah, if I can do some PR of him here, that would be excellent. His name is Ander Vitoria.
Nice.
Also, he's stepped into the considerable boots of Oleg Salenko, no? Who used to play for that team.
Logroñés.
Long time ago, though.
Long time ago. In the 90s, yeah. Logroñés was a classic top flight team. Mm. But, how it goes when a team goes into bankruptcy and all that. The team is split in two different teams, actually. There are two Logroñés now.
Logro and Nes.
Why not? They are, funnily enough, both they are called the same way. Logroñés, but with the different initials at the beginning.
Right. It's like UB40, they had a very similar thing, no?
Yeah.
No, like Ali Campbell's touring and his brother and the rest are doing, and they're both called UB40.
Yeah, exactly.
One's called Provisional UB40, I'm not sure.
Or like the Manchester United and the other club in Manchester, run by the fans, but one is rich and the other one is poor.
Exactly.
In this case, in Logroñés, both are poor.
All right, okay, that's amazing. All right, well, keep us up to date on your cousin's progress. Penguin of Truth, though, just on that Wales-Denmark game, or Denmark-Wales, says, is Ryan Giggs in a no-win situation? If he beats the Danish fourth-string side, there's no glory. Lose it, and it'll be a major catastrophe. Plus, no possibility of scouting or preparing. Giggs must be livid. Because he's big on doing the groundwork, isn't
he? Yeah.
I think as long as he repeats the kind of team talk that we showed him give towards the end of his brief spell at Manchester United, they'll be fine.
They'll be fine. Lads, it's YouTubers. On the subject of internationals, by the way, Scotland's women's team beat Albania on Tuesday night and qualified for their first ever World Cup. So that's good. Yeah. England, of course, got through, it was last week, that 3-0 win over Wales. They followed that up with a 6-0 win over Kazakhstan, with their manager Phil Neville enjoying spectacular success. No doubt the fruit of his remarkably thorough... The word is not stalking. The word is... backup for his players, no? As he explained, he's in touch with all 30 of the squad. He knows where they are and what they're doing 24 hours a day. It's remarkable. That must not in any way feel uncomfortable.
Of the Neville brothers, he is the big brother.
Right. So, yeah. What was that word that Yap Stam used about them?
Busy. See you next Tuesday.
Busy, yeah. So he's keeping busy. But that's wonderful. Brilliant stuff for them. And the Women's World Cup happens, Jules?
In France next summer.
Right, that'd be great.
Yeah, that'd be great, yeah.
It's one that Italy did actually qualify for.
Ah, okay, right. Superb. All right, hey, speaking of France, Jules, you're about to go and catch a flight because?
Because they're playing Munich tonight against Germany away for their first game as World Cup champions. It's so sweet to say.
And we don't get tired of hearing it either.
No, I mean, 4 years, I don't care, for 4 years.
Right, and... any squad news that we should know?
I mean, continuity really is the key word there. Deschamps called up 21 players out of the 23 that were in Russia. The two missing are Mandanda and Lloris simply because they're injured. Otherwise, they would be here. I think it's partly also because on Sunday there will be a little ceremony in Paris before the Netherlands game.
Uh-huh.
So it made sense that the whole squad would be there. I think it's still open, and maybe in the near future even we see some new faces maybe and people. you know, dropping out. But right now, it made sense for Deschamps to just call back the same people.
Okay, usually when teams, France, for example, go away to Clairefontaine, you get all the players coming out with controversial remarks about their club situation. Has there been anything from Pogba, for example?
No, I mean, it's been really short because they met up on Monday and there was a lot of happiness, a lot of hugs, a lot of love. They had that big banner saying, you know, welcome to our champions, two big stars at the bottom of the stairs that you go up to go to the building.
Just two, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, if you count the one before Second World War and all that, I'm not sure it's very relevant. But yeah, just two for now, but only in the last 20 years, though.
Yeah, that is impressive.
Yeah, it is impressive. So
Germany,
there was a lot of
love. Germany got loads of stars. How worried are you about Germany?
I think they're in transition. And I think, you know, it's a big game for Yogi Love, for example, because they can't, if they get battered by France tomorrow, the pressure will increase so much on him that you wonder how he will come out of that. I think he got really lucky to get quite lightly from the debacle at the World Cup. I think someone like Thomas Müller, again, it's a huge game for him because there's some very good youngsters coming through. And I think he will feel the pressure. And I think for us, there's no pressure. I mean, it's, you know, the boys are so happy to be back together. The momentum and the dynamic is incredible. The positive, not just of winning the World Cup, but of having something. They're all so young that they all believe, and Deschamps, the first one, that, you know, it's only the beginning, if you want. It potentially could be only the beginning of you know, a really good run at it. And I think they're very looking forward to seeing how the next 2, 4, 6 years, even 8 years pan out.
Jules, a certain amount of unhappiness within the squad. No Ozil, of course, because of those issues. But Leroy Sané is in the squad, although that's not to everyone's liking, Jules.
Yeah, some weird comments by Toni Kroos this week publicly as well, saying, you know, Leroy Sané could be a great player for Germany, but right now he doesn't really care if he wins or loses, questioning his attitude, which is not something new. I mean, Pep Guardiola and also Yogi Love, I've sort of mentioned that a little bit, highlighted it a bit in terms of Leroy Sané's attitude. But coming from Toni Kroos, when they're together in the same squad, I mean, it must have been awkward at breakfast the next morning, like, hey, hi. Oh, and, you know, it's not really the vibe that you should have when not just you're in transition, but you had a, you know, really bad last tournament. Leroy Sané wasn't there, but he's back, and that's the way he's welcomed back by one of the key players in that team. It's a bit weird, I thought.
Definitely. Right, okay. For Holland also in that group. Tough group now. What do we know about the current state of the Netherlands?
It's not good. I don't think that they've got a terrifying squad as they did in the past. In fact, if you check it thoroughly, many of the Dutch players, they wouldn't make it to the German or the French national team.
Really?
I really think so. Yeah, in the past they had always some referential players in their positions. Not anymore. I think that France and Germany are a million times better than Netherlands at the minute. But of course, playing at Netherlands is never easy. What I think is that Germany and France, they are going to show a class of styles, because I believe that in the last 6 years there has been this new French style that it's very physical. They play good football, but they are mainly physical and they bully every player. And Germany is just the opposite. Believe it or not, they have tried to play really beautiful football over the last years. And when the World Cup finished, I remember that there was this debate in Spain whether Spain should adopt more of a French style. So maybe France is setting now a new tendency, but I think that Germany are going to be quite loyal to the Joachim Löw style, which relies a lot on the ball.
The other love train. Wow. With so much to look forward to over the next few days. It all begins today. Among the fixtures, Wales-Ireland, which we haven't really touched on. Again, they face each other. A lot of history between those two sides, recent history indeed, and we'll discuss how that went, of course, in Monday's The Tiddly Football Show, when we're joined by Michael Cox, Daniel Story and Tom Williams. On this show, though, listener, hang about, because still to come, we've got Ronaldo back in La Liga, the latest on MLS, Wayne Rooney and that new Miami side, and your questions.
You're listening to The Totally Football Show, sponsors of Melchester Rovers. Find out more at RoyTheRoversOfficial.com.
Hey, listener, are you in Miami? Whew, you lucky thing. Your new MLS team has just got a name. David Beckham announcing that the franchise is going to be called Club Internacional. You should say this, actually, Alvaro. What's it going to be called?
Club Internacional de Football Miami. It's a funny mix of Spanish and English. Spanglish, as they call it in Miami.
Ah, there you go. So Inter Miami. Is it actually officially called Inter Miami, or is that just what everyone's adopted?
I think that this is going to be the abbreviation to it. No?
Yeah. Inter Miami FC, yeah.
Right, okay. They'll kick off life in MLS in 2020. Now, our friend George Qureshi from The Athletic actually lives in Florida, and of course he's been keeping us updated on the progress of the new team over the years. So producer Ben caught up with him a little earlier to talk about all sorts of things, starting with reaction to Inter Miami's name.
You know, they announced this at 5 a.m. in Miami time, which is just about when people are leaving the clubs, I guess. They filed the trademark with Internacional Club de Fútbol. Someone realized that in Spanish, usually the adjectives come after the subject. So now the team name is Club Internacional de Fútbol. It's definitely the most tangible thing we have for this club, which was announced 4 years ago. They still don't have a stadium. There's a referendum coming in November about whether they want to turn a public golf course into, you know, a stadium and hotel and business park complex. So until that happens, everyone here, I think, is still a little skeptical. But, you know, there's a nice new black, pink and white logo for everyone to look at.
Well, George, Miami are a good few seasons away from coming into MLS. So let's talk about the current league and let's talk about Wayne Rooney. He's at DC United. And we talked a couple of weeks ago on the show about his amazing tackle and assist that led to an amazing win for the team. How's he getting on over there in the capital?
Oh, man. Rooney, I think, you know, we have a long history of retired, or I guess in retiring, slowly retiring European players coming back and playing here in the U.S. You know, you never know what you're going to get. Rooney's been a real surprise, I think. And, you know, that goal, he just looked 10 years younger, didn't he? You know, DC, they had 2 wins in 14 games before he showed up, and they've won 6 of the last 11 with him in the lineup. So they've been very impressive. And the nice thing for them is that because they opened their new stadium in mid-July, they have a few games in hand on the teams ahead of them in the playoff race. So I think they just need to bypass Vancouver and they'll be in the postseason. And MLS, you know, all you need to do is have a nice run in October, November, and you've won everything. So they could very well make it deep into the playoffs.
Over on the other coast, Rooney's former Man U teammate, Zlatan, he's at LA Galaxy and he started amazingly well there when he joined them. But I've just been looking at the table for the Western Conference and it looks like the Galaxy could miss out on the playoffs this season. I imagine Ibra's being typically quiet and humble about all of that.
Yeah, it'll be better than last season when they were really atrocious. But LA is a strange team. They have a very, very good attack. Zlatan has 16 goals and 8 assists in 21 appearances, which is very good. He skipped a couple of games. He skipped the MLS All-Star game and a game recently in Seattle because they were being played on artificial turf. The problem for LA is their defense is atrocious. I mean, they've scored the third most goals in MLS with 51. They've let in the most goals in MLS with 54. So that sort of tells you the story. And Zlatan seems to be getting a little bit frustrated. He was sent off for slapping an opponent in May. He was fined last week for slapping a different opponent. And LA has not won in their last 6. And that includes losses of 5-0 and 6-2.
Wow.
He also said, "I want to help my teammates win, and I'm here for the moment, so all of you should enjoy while I'm here." So that sounds noncommittal.
Well, enjoy it while it lasts. Let's talk about, finally, the national team, George. You didn't make it to Russia, of course, and David Moyes was linked with the manager's job recently. Are things really that bad?
Oh, man. No one really knows. You know, they created a new position called, you know, general manager of the national team. So this person is supposed to take some of the responsibilities that the former president of U.S. soccer had, Sunil Gulati, who doesn't really know that much about soccer. He knows business pretty well, but not really the game. They hired Ernie Stewart, who was a longtime U.S. national team player and played in Holland as well. And the reports are that he's yet to interview a single candidate. So even though, you know, there have been a few people linked to the job of several MLS coaches and a few from overseas, really, nobody has any clue right now what's going to happen. And Dave Sarakin, who was, you know, I guess the topmost guy on the Titanic that went down against Trinidad and Tobago. He was an assistant coach on that team, but managed to scramble off the ship into a lifeboat. He's been shepherding this team in its post-World Cup haze. And we've got a game against Brazil coming up. We have called in an interesting team. It sort of highlights some of the weaknesses of this team. We don't have a great striker. There's with Christian Pulisic out with Dortmund with some sort of muscle injury. We don't really have much of an attacking presence from the midfield. And so going to be interesting to see what this looks like. I'm anticipating a bit of a bunker, but then again, that worked for us in our last friendly, which in which you may recall we tied France, soon to be world champion France.
George Qureshi, sign up to The Athletic at theathletic.com. Now, questions. Scoop, aka Jonas Kerr, says, could you ask the panel, would they like the away goals rule scrapped from the Champions League Europa League, as was discussed this week at the coaches' conference in Neon? Did you see this, Jules?
Yeah, I would scrap it.
Yeah, okay.
I would scrap it. I think I can understand the argument that it's harder to score away from home than at home. That's why every team score more at home than away from home. Mm-hmm. I get that. I think if you're a player of that level and you reach the semi-final of the Champions League and you play at home and you draw 1-1 and the other team had one shot that was deflected, that went in, and then you go to the second leg and you can only do 0-0 despite attacking and everything, so there's two draws, 1-1 and 0-0, and you're still out, I would find that really frustrated, and I don't really see the sense of it.
So what would you do? Just play, have extra time after second?
Yeah. Okay. And I think, you know, again, I understand that it's harder to score or potentially harder to score away from home.
But trying to get rid of it. Football's moved on. Yeah. Do you guys agree?
Yeah, I mean, you had that absurd situation a few years ago when both the Milan clubs played in a Champions League semi-final. Inter went out on away goals, even though they both played at San Siro. You know, I mean, if you look at home advantage since the 1960s, it used to be that 70% of the time the home team won, and that's progressively declined to the point where I think it's now under 50%. Yeah, the away goals rule was implemented to encourage the away teams to attack and be a little bit bolder. I think they are now. Statistically, that's proven. Teams go to play away as though they would at home. So I think it's about time that this was gone.
Gone. Julian Broughton asks, what impact would scrapping away goals in Europe, as suggested by the elite managers, actually have on two-legged ties?
It will definitely, because many teams are playing and are favouring playing home the first game. Uh-huh. And just getting the 0-0 at home, Jose Mourinho loves that, and then scoring a goal away. So I think that, yes, it will have an impact. It will have an impact, definitely. But there is something that Diego Pablo Simeone has been complaining a lot for years. And I think that he's absolutely right. With the away goals rule, you got some parity. There are 90 minutes at your home, 90 minutes away, and you have to deal with that. But what when there is extra time? Why is the away goals still standing? 30 minutes in which the away team is going to have a 30 minutes advantage over the other club.
Right, because goals there count not double, but, you know, more.
Yeah, of course. So there is one team who's got 120 minutes away, which means that he's got that extra option of scoring an away goal. Why is the away goals rule standing in the extra time of the second game? That is something that Simeone has asked to many UEFA members, but he never got an answer for that. Because there is no answer for that. It's just not fair.
He's not part of the elite managers group, is he?
No, but he has been. And every time that Atletico de Madrid has played a game in Europe, has been asking the same question in the press conference as well.
Oh, I was just wondering why he's not, you know, to be fair.
No, I think he's been there in the past.
He has been there in the past. Okay, cool. Broadly in favour. Scott Kyo, I think that's right. Hello, Scott. Wants us to mention the fact that the Partick Thistle player who scored, but whose goal wasn't given, against Greenock Morton, hasn't been awarded the goal, as we know, but he has been awarded the goal bonus, which is given to charity. Scott says, I think this deserves a mention. You're absolutely right. As does Robert Earnshaw's remarkable tweet, which Richard Cohen references. This is Robert Earnshaw. Did you see this, Jules?
No, I haven't, no.
Really?
No.
Okay. So, the former Cardiff, Nottingham Forest and Wales striker asked, since we sent robots to Mars before sending humans, isn't it possible that the first extraterrestrials that we encounter on Earth could not be the aliens themselves, but might be their technology instead? Richard Cohen says, Robert Earnshaw asked that, would be good to know what you think about his theory. Also, if this extracurricular interest was why he was so good at finding space. Nicely done. But it's true, though, isn't it? No, I mean, you know, we send probes, so likely anything arriving here, Jules, is going to be some form of early...
So they might already be here and we don't know it.
Well, if you think about it, like the Russians, the first thing they sent into space was a dog, and I think the Americans followed that up with a monkey. So who knows?
Exactly. You know, they're already here amongst us and we don't even know.
Monkeys might have come from outer space?
Yeah, or objects, you know, they could have sent over.
Or some people behaving like robots.
Yeah, that's
that
so
there
true.
Are many as well.
Yeah.
So who knows? Maybe they are the aliens.
Very possibly. Have you seen that John Carpenter film,
Which
They
one?
Live?
Oh yeah, of course.
Oh yeah, great movie. No, that's very much, you know, that's they're amongst us. Have you seen that, James?
No.
Oh, you really should. Roddy Piper, who I'm not familiar with in his wrestling guys, yeah. But I know Ben's like, he's jumping up and down in the control booth over there.
He's picked up a steel chair.
It's a great, and of course it's got a great theme tune because nobody does theme tunes like John Carpenter.
I have come here to chew bubblegum and kick ass. And I'm all out of bubblegum.
Another man who knows who Roddy Piper, of course, is Matt Davis Adams, who's just had his first baby, who's host of Parts Unknown Wrestling Podcast. So congratulations to you, Matt. And to, of course, your wife who did all the work, Amy Adams.
In what was that recent alien film?
Yeah. It wasn't Arrival. Was it Arrival?
Yeah, but they're already here, James.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They've arrived.
Yeah, interesting. That film was a lot about how time is a flat circle.
Mm.
So, you know, they've always been here, I suppose. And that's, anyway.
Let's go back to the football.
Here's another question. Danny Reeves, what do you guys think about the Liga's latest craziness? They're offering to subsidise fans' travel to this league game they're going to do in the States, free hotels and reduce flight costs. Looks like it's going to be Girona against Barcelona. I'd be fuming if I were a Girona fan.
They don't have many to start with, so...
All right, but this is such a huge controversy, Alvaro.
They don't have many supporters, all right. Yeah, fine, I can buy that, but it's a huge controversy.
Beyond the Girona thing, I mean, this has got fans in Spain up in arms, no?
Yes, absolutely. Everyone says that that game is going to be Girona versus Barcelona, a game that was supposed to be played on the 26th, 27th of January 2019, and it will be held in Miami, all this theoretically. Girona will get 1,500 free tickets and a compensation package for those season ticket holders mm-hmm. that don't want to go to Miami and watch a football game in there. But the thing here, the thing that relies... is Javier Tebas, the Liga president, not having explained this well to media and especially to clubs. Meaning that it was said and announced that La Liga was going to be played in Miami, but the right details weren't shortlisted as soon as news broke. Therefore, all the clubs didn't know pretty much what they were going to do, what was going to be made, and which fixture was going to be played in there. I think that from the communication level, La Liga has done everything upside down. Mm-hmm. They should have explained everything better from the beginning.
But even if they explained it better, just the principle of taking a league match, one of your 20 sides, home fixtures, and playing it on the other side of the world for essentially commercial reasons is something that's, I think, quite horrifying for most fans.
This is a Catalan derby, right?
Yeah.
And another thing, Girona only got promoted last year. So this is what would be the second opportunity that they'd get to play Barcelona at home. And it's being taken away from them, which I think is outrageous.
It's not the hostilest place in Spain, but if you're Real Madrid or Atletico Madrid, and it's an away game that is not going to be away from home for Barcelona, which, you know, we mentioned today, that it's usually tougher to go away, blah blah blah.
Although it is going to be a long way away.
Yeah, but it's away for everyone.
But in terms of the next fixture, they've got to factor in international
flights. The Spanish Cup is in between as well.
Oh really?
The Spanish Cup quarterfinals are in between as well.
Alvaro, do you think this is actually going to happen?
I think that this is for real. Yeah. This is for real. I will give it.
The Premier League floated the 39th game, and there was such an uproar that it's gone away. Possibly not definitively, but for now, it's been kind of kicked into the long grass. This, you think, is going to go ahead?
This is for real. 95% sure. This is going to happen, like Brexit, maybe. I don't know. But what I can say is that the problem here is that also this cannot be arbitrary. It cannot be Barcelona-Girona just because those teams accept it. It has to be either every club plays one game away or none of them. Because what if Girona gets relegated, having lost those home points, which probably they would have lost anyway. But isn't it better to play in front of your supporters, in your stadium, competitive football, rather than in Miami when you are going to be effectively the away team, because I can imagine the Latino people in Miami will support Barcelona. Mm. Definitely not Girona unless they are Real Madrid fans.
I think also Girona is owned 85% by the
Manchester City.
Yeah, Manchester City Group. that Pere Guardiola, who's Pep's brother, also has shares in the group, in the club. And if you put all that together, you know, when you know how much the Manchester City group wants to expand everywhere, and we see that with all the clubs they've bought, it's not a surprise that it's Girona that will be playing that game, you know, in the US.
Wow.
It's all a bit dodgy though.
Mm. So at present, in terms of resistance to this, in terms of people threatening any kind of action, the fans, other clubs, anything, is there any prospect of it being derailed?
Yes, there has been a threat that I would call a little bit fake, really. The Spanish Football Union met last week and they threatened with having a strike if this was going ahead.
But so they'd have to have futsal players.
I'll tell you what, they are good. But
Alvaro's cousin.
Yeah, and Alvaro.
Hopefully. But there was no unity against the Footballers' Union. For instance, Athletic de Bilbao players didn't attend that meeting. So if there is no union among the Footballers' Union, how can this be stopped? So I really think that this is for real, guys. And Javier Tebas, La Liga president, is trying to export La Liga brand now that Cristiano Ronaldo is gone, especially for that. And they are trying to catch up with Premier League, which is going to be really difficult and probably costly.
Okay.
It couldn't have happened to a nicer guy than Javier Tebas, who's always lecturing everyone about how great he is and how rubbish everybody else. Well, on this one,
PSG,
not so much.
Yes.
Yeah. Exactly.
All right, well, there's so much more to discuss about what's going on in Spain, so why don't we have a little pause and then we'll be back with some of that.
And before we talk about Spain,
yeah,
it's Alvaro's debut today, isn't it?
That's true, and Jules, what are you proposing?
Usually debut.
Yes.
It's an initiation. You have to sing.
Yeah, did you sing anything in your first show?
But the show just started. We would have lost a lot of
actually,
listeners.
It's not my debut, Julian, because I think that I've been in the show like 5-6 times already. So
yeah.
I won't be singing.
It's your debut in the studio.
I won't be singing La Macarena or anything that.
What would you sing if you were going to sing something?
La Macarena.
Yes. Would you go with that?
Right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Come on.
Dale a tu cuerpo alegría, Macarena, que tu cuerpo es para darle alegría, Macarena, y cosa buena. Dale a tu cuerpo alegría, Macarena. Hey, Macarena.
Oh, ow. Nice.
Well, this is the end of my career.
No, that was really well.
I think it's the start of a new career.
Maybe the start of a new one.
Really better at singing.
All right, excellent. Now,
the Sanremo Festival.
Now, La Liga, listener, come back. Yeah, right, La Liga. Now, there's lots to talk about here, Alvaro. Of course, good starts from Barcelona and Real Madrid, as usual, 3 from 3. Barcelona's 8-2 last weekend against Huesca. Great starts just behind them from Celta Vigo, Iago Aspas and company, and Levante in fourth. But the story I most want you to explain about is Valladolid. Is that right? Real Valladolid?
Valladolid.
And then new owner.
Yes, it's been a new deal for Valladolid. Ronaldo, the former Brazilian star, has bought the 51% of Valladolid stakes. So he's the major stakeholders.
Wow, so 30 million euros.
So cheap.
Yeah, but it's still a lot of money, Alvaro, for us.
Yeah,
is that his money or is he the front man?
No, he's the front man. That is his money as well. I was reading that Ronaldo doesn't want to take a lot of risks when it comes to finances. And normally he devotes only the 20% of his fortune to things, or less. He's estimated to have a 300 million euros fortune himself, so this will be effectively the 10% of his money.
Wow.
And he has bought a team that is excited about the new prospect. Ronaldo's working lines are defined by 4 words, competitiveness, transparency, revolution, and social. But what lies behind all this is just stability in the top flight. Valladolid was a very stable club in the top flight back in the 90s, but they haven't been ever since. So hopefully Ronaldo will bring that stability.
Okay, now they've just come up. They've just been promoted this season. Why Valladolid? Does he have any connection with them as a club? Why weren't they just a good opportunity?
No, there is not a clear connection in there. It's true that Valladolid has always had like a decent relationship with Real Madrid. There are some wine cellars in there that Ronaldo has had an interest on.
Okay.
I think that he had some investments in there, but nothing related to the football. It was something related to the wine industry. But yes, the main thing here is that Valladolid has something to be excited about, which hasn't happened to them in the last, I'm telling you, seriously, in the last couple of decades.
Right.
Yeah.
Is he going to buy them a new pitch?
No one has said that yet. His investment is going to be, for the time being, is going to be quite modest, if anything, humble. And he will go step by step. They were people claiming him to buy Vinicius or to get Vinicius, the Real Madrid young star that was that plays in the Spanish third division.
Right.
But Ronaldo hasn't gotten that loan.
Right. You mentioned, Vinicius, and I think a lot of people will have seen the story playing for Real Madrid's B team in the third division. So that he was bitten on the head.
Yeah, and the picture is traumatic.
Yeah,
I don't know if you have seen it, but it's unbelievable. Vinicius couldn't believe his eyes. It's been something that the Spanish media has echoed a lot because Real Madrid has a lot of impact in Spain and in Spanish media as well. And I cannot believe that happened in competitive football again. I mean, the last time I remember of a biting, it was Luis Suarez in 2014. Mm-hmm. And Suarez
was... The time before that was Luis Suarez. And the time before that was
Luis Suarez again. Yeah, yeah. But yeah, the poor Vinicius is getting to learn how Spanish third division can be.
Right. Any word yet on the punishment for the biter?
I'm not too sure about that. I couldn't confirm that, but there will be definitely a punishment, of course.
Okay.
Perhaps in retrospective action will be taken, yes. But
You'd hope so. All right. So up at the top then, Real Madrid, who saw all sorts of numbers about shares and social media followers plummeting after Ronaldo left. But in football terms, even though they haven't replaced him with a big name, they started really nicely.
They're still all right. You can see the first signs of Julen Lopetegui. The possession is key for Real Madrid. They are attacking and defending very far away from the new goalkeeper, Thibaut Courtois, who played the first game last Saturday. And it was funny to see how Keylor Navas got the award to the best goalkeeper last season in UEFA, and then he went straight to the bench.
Right.
But Real Madrid seems to be... Perhaps they are not good enough to win Champions League. Probably now Real Madrid fans, they are going to abuse me in social media for this. But I think that Real Madrid has a better team to compete for La Liga than Champions League this season. Because if you check the squad last year, they had some players on the bench that made the difference. Mateo Kovacic was one of them, for example. And many more. Marco Asensio was on the bench. A couple of years ago, James Rodriguez, Pepe, Álvaro Morata were there as well. If you look at the Real Madrid bench now, it's a bunch of promising youngsters, plus Keylor Navas, but I don't think that is enough to be competitive in European football.
Right, okay. And the likes of Celta Vigo and Levante, how long-term are their prospects of continuing the success?
I think that the key for them is staying in the top flight.
Right.
Celta de Vigo may try to fight for the Europa League positions, but I don't think that they will be able to do it, really.
Okay, Atletico Madrid currently down in 10th.
Yes, because Diego Pablo Simeone has a really good squad at the minute, but I think that Simeone is a very good manager when he manages the scarcity rather than the abundance.
Right.
This has happened to Atletico de Madrid over the last years. Everyone demands Simeone to play attacking football. Then Simeone realizes that attacking football doesn't work for him, and he's back into his old ethos, which is defending first and winning 1-0.
Can we just mention Joaquin, who came on at 37 years of age to win the Sevillan derby, which I thought was amazing. I mean, he came on a few minutes later, he scores the winner. It's in a tough, tough game where I think there was like 10 yellow cards and one red card or something. And
wow.
For Joaquin at 37, I mean, yeah, it's super cool.
He is a super charismatic guy in social media. His social media are hilarious, really. I mean, he's a really nice guy. And he was only able to play 20 minutes, no more than that, because he had an injury in his calf, I think, and he managed to win the derby, something that he didn't score in a Sevilla derby since 2002. So we're talking about the beginning of the 21st century. And I'm happy for the guy, really. Joaquin is still one of these franchise players for Real Betis. Yeah.
He's working quite a lot on his social media. Sounds a bit like joking. So, Alvaro, what a sensational debut. Show's not over yet, though, because look out. Here come the odds on some of the games we've been discussing today, courtesy of producer Ben, who's been speaking to Paddy Power.
Thank you, Jimbo. Lee Price from Paddy Power is on the line. And Lee, it's International Week, so let's get right stuck into things here. England are taking on Spain at Wembley. Give me the odds, please, on England winning 2-0 and Harry Maguire scoring at least one of them.
Yeah, well, we finished further than them in the World Cup, so that definitely means we're better than Spain, so this must happen. The odds of England winning 2-0 and Harry Maguire scoring are about 16-1. If you just fancy the 2-0, it's 15-2. Maguire's quite a short price, actually. 6-4 to score anytime. He's our biggest threat, after all.
Well, let's see how those odds compare to Scotland. They've got a friendly against Belgium and a Nations League game against Albania. What about them doing the double?
Yeah, hard to work out which is the bigger and more important game, really. They are 10-1 to win both games. They're just 5-1 to beat Belgium, which could be any price you want, in my opinion. But they should beat Albania, at least.
We've been talking a lot about France's game with Germany with Jules during the show today. Can Germany regroup and shock the world champs here?
We think yes, actually. They're just 6-5 to win this. France are 9-5. The draw's 2-1, so very tightly priced.
And let's talk about the really big one, Lee. Liechtenstein to get the win over Gibraltar.
So when I asked the traders about this one, at first they said, are you sure you don't mean a different game? That's not a big game at all. I said, no, Ben's being sarcastic. We have got a price for this eventually. It's 1-3 for Liechtenstein to win this game. Gibraltar are massive 17-2, but they're usually around 33-1. So maybe the draw at 4-1 is quite interesting here.
Well, you can find out those odds and more at paddypower.com. All prices are accurate at the time of recording. It's 18 plus only. BeGambleAware.org. And when the fun stops, stop. We're going to be back on Monday. I mentioned this before. Daniel Story, Michael Cox and Tom Williams are with us. Listen, I hope you are too. James Horncastle, lovely to see you.
Ciao for now.
You got a big weekend?
Stag do.
Oh, no way. Where are you going?
Isle of Wight, apparently.
Yeah, be my first choice as well. Yeah. Right. Anyone you want to give a shout out to?
Dave, whose stag do it is, I suppose. Yeah.
Right.
Is it going to be messy or is it going to be not so messy?
I don't know. We'll see. Yeah.
I think no two words.
Usually when you say
it's not,
it does.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Right. Álvaro?
My parents are coming over to London this weekend.
Is it going to get messy?
It is. Yeah, a lot. Probably having a chicken tikka masala is going to be the craziest thing I'm going to do with them.
Fantastic.
So
when they come to London, what's the first thing they like to do? Is it chicken tikka masala?
No, my father always wants to have a pint.
Does he?
Yeah, and then my mother wants to go shopping. I am very patronizing here, but that is the way it goes with my parents.
No, that's fair enough. Julien, what do your parents like to do?
When they come over. Oh.
Okay.
Yeah.
What are you up to this weekend?
Well, I'm clearly the only one working.
Because you're off to Germany now.
Yeah, and then France, Netherlands on Sunday.
Wow.
You know, to celebrate the World Cup win.
Yeah, congratulations on that. Super. All right. Well, listener, whatever you get up to, hope you have a great time and catch up with us on Monday. For now, from all of us here, it's bye-bye.
You've been listening to The Totally Football Show, a Muddy Knees Media production. For sales and advertising, email sales@muddyneesmedia.com. And make sure you check out our other football podcasts, the revamped Totally Football League show with Caroline Barker and the brand new Totally Scottish Football Show. Supporting your team can be a beautiful thing, but then come the injuries, the goal droughts and the downright disastrous defeats. That's a little bit like life, really. And here at the Totally Football Show, we believe we should all support each other the way we support our team, through the good days and the bad. And that's why we're continuing to work with CALM, the Campaign Against Living Miserably, a charity dedicated to preventing male suicide. On average, 12 men take their own life every day in the UK. So that's your starting 11 and your manager every single day. And part of the problem is that many of us still feel uncomfortable talking about mental health and suicide, and this can often stop men from opening up and getting support when they need it the most. So if you're worried that someone close to you is having a tough time, check in with them and let them know that CALM is there. Every day from 5 p.m. till midnight, CALM provide a free, confidential and anonymous helpline and web chat for any man who needs support. Visit thecalmzone.net to find out more about CALM.